The concert is set for Sunday at 4 o'clock in Kalamazoo's First Congregational Church downtown, and it's part of the Connecting Chords Festival, a series of 20 events over 2 months that is sponsored by the Michigan Festival of Sacred Music, as it was first known. And Scuola Antiqua's program really does offer this opportunity to explore not one kind of spirituality or religious faith, but a few different kinds, and to also see how they interconnect. So it just seems like an ideal program for people interested in what makes faiths separate from one another, as well as what they have in common, in musical tradition at least.
Thank you for those words, and I concur. We're delighted to be in Kalamazoo and at the festival. I've had the good fortune of being part of the festival before with other ensembles exploring different perspectives on the same general topic with the Golosa Russian Choir, which also performs annually at the Kalamazoo Russian Festival.
I have your T-shirt.
Oh, how about that? We have music of the old believers from Central and Northern Russia in the Orthodox diaspora, and then also with the Rose Ensemble, a Minnesota-based professional ensemble, through which I met Nell Snidus, who is one of our two guest artists for the Sunday program, a wonderful New York-based soprano and cantorial and Sephardic music expert who has been in residence at the Milken Archives there. So we developed this program, The Sounds of Faith of Medieval Jerusalem, for the Met Cloisters Museum in Manhattan in 2016 as part of their Every People Under Heaven exhibition, focusing on art that had been generated between roughly 1000 and 1400 in Jerusalem. And what Scuola Antiqua really specializes in is creating and curating programs related to current undergoing scholarship. So we have different researchers and advisors that are working on a corpus of music or at the intersection of music and art, and may have an exhibition or a symposium, and we will illustrate those items, those artifacts, those objects of historical inquiry with sounds of the time. And this was a perfect opportunity to explore some of the repertoire that is known both through oral tradition and through primary sources from this time in Jerusalem. And also in the European memory of Jerusalem as an axis mundi or a pilgrimage site in the early modern period, in the Renaissance period. So it plays to some of our strengths as a medieval and Renaissance ensemble, exploring some of the earliest notated music and then also putting it in context with later developments in polyphony. And the opportunity to bring it to Kalamazoo is just a delightful one. We can't wait.
Scuola Antiqua of Chicago was formed in 2000, and you've recorded and released a number of albums, well-received albums. And what's wonderful as well is some of the material on those recordings have never been recorded before. So as you were referencing new research, I wondered if that is one of the results, actually getting to perform for the first time on an album, music that has newly been discovered.
Those are compelling mysteries for us, being able to uncover, recover, rebuild, put in context, experiment with and see how it works in the modern voice and with instruments and with insights from performers of multiple streams. And this program very much represents some things that have not been recorded before and some things that have been recorded from one particular method of recovery. You can't sing everything from medieval Jerusalem as if it were a Gregorian chant, for example, because that wasn't part of the continuous tradition there. And one thing that listeners to this concert will hear is this idea of a non-diatonic musical scale, which, specialism aside, there's just a certain way of hearing notes together in a scale that are familiar in Western music. And in fact, a lot of the music that one will hear on this concert are in other modes. In the Islamic tradition, there are maqams, which are these modes or scales which have notes between notes from the Western perspective. And so using what notation or oral tradition that we have for some of the music on this program and trying to sing it as if it were modern bel canto repertoire or even Gregorian chant wouldn't be the most accurate approach. And so we've enlisted specialists from within our roster and our guest Amro Hosni Helmi, who is a wonderful musician of Egyptian origin who plays the oud and who works with us on these scales that are less familiar to the Western trained voice or ear. We also have some selections on the program that were researched and arranged for us by some guest scholars. And that includes Alyssa Mathias, who is at UCLA, who is actually working on our arrangement of a Armenian hymn, which is on this program, while she was in Istanbul during the coup a few years ago. It just so happened that that's where she was when we asked her about this, and she was looking at materials while there was a power outage and putting some of this together, and to hear her tell it, it was a centering activity in the midst of some chaos. And that's really what we find with a lot of this type of exploration. We need to draw on a diverse group of scholars and experts, and it is a labor of love for them, as in addition to the academic labor of trying to get authentic performance practices in context. So there are some delightful things on this program.
How many performers are with Schola Antiqua, and are they singers or instrumentalists as well? You mentioned the oud expert.
Yeah, we have 6 singers on this program that range by modern vocal types from baritone to soprano, and then we have our 2 guests. So that's Nell Snidus, who's the soprano and Sephardic music expert, and Amro Helmi, who is the oud player and also a wonderful singer. Most of us are based in the Chicago area, which is where the Schola Antiqua Foundation, which is dedicated to the exploration and performance of this music, is based. Our artistic director, Michael Allen Anderson, is on faculty at the Eastman School at the University of Rochester and comes in from there. And Nell is based in New York City.
So the group's area of expertise is music pre-1600. But for this program, we're talking even earlier than that. What are some of the earliest pieces or sources that will be represented?
Well, among things that we have in the program are the Adhan, which is the call to prayer in the Muslim tradition, which from the earliest decades of Islamic practice and culture has been preserved in oral tradition. It has several branches. One can go to different places, again, across that diaspora and listen to the beauty of it in different ways. And it's something that was not initially notated within its own tradition, but we have some of these modes in which it was intoned, referenced in some medieval sources, including in Jerusalem. We have the Talal Badru Alaina, which is a song attested as early in the lyrics as the 7th century, which tells of the Isra and Miraj, which is the night journey to Jerusalem taken by the prophet. And then we have one of the oldest surviving pieces of notated Jewish chant, which is called the Mi'al Har Horev, which is also known by its refrain, Kemoshe, which just means like Moses. It has a call and response. It was probably used as a procession, and it's an intercultural piece of music at its heart. The poetry at the core of it, which references the Torah and also has new verses to it, is attributed to a poet who himself was a convert between Abrahamic traditions. The melody, which is attributed to Obadiah the proselyte, was a 12th century Christian convert to Judaism. And so we know from this fragment of notated music that was found in a ritual depository of Torah in Egypt that both the lyricist and the composer were working in this richly cross-cultural converting between traditions intersection. And so it just happens that one of the earliest pieces of chant that we have is already part of this dialogue or dialectic between cultures.
I want to ask you, Matthew, if this music is pre-music to the formal training that most musicians get today, your ear learns to love and just hear that the scale passages, the well-tempered scales of today. Did you have to unlearn, and was it difficult to learn to sing in modes and makams? And
unlearning is such a wonderful word. Thank you for that term in this conversation. And there is a conscious and joyous process of unlearning when musicians from different streams get together and relearn. In Western classical vocal music, there will be vocal coaches that will tell individuals among us not to sing certain styles of music from other places because it may lead the voice to an unhealthy pathway. And most of us within the Schola Antiqua circle disagree with that form of pedagogy and enjoy finding multiple pathways and in making our instruments flexible and our minds open for receiving these other styles of singing that propagated within their own traditions for many centuries. We have on this lineup a good friend of mine, Joseph Lavezetta, who's a baritone, classically trained, but has spent time in the Republic of Georgia with practitioners of the Georgian polyphonic tradition going back many centuries. Some of the earliest surviving Christian liturgical structures, churches, and the oldest bishoprics of the essentially Catholic Church are in the Republic of Georgia in the Caucasus. And there is a way of singing that can be heard outside or inside with equal purity and balance of different voices. And Joe really unlearned some of the things he learned as a classical musician in order to gain the tools to be able to perform this Georgian music. And that's really the strength of this circle of Schola Antiqua singers. We're each leaders of song in different traditions, which range from Gregorian chant to Georgian polyphony to Russian folk singing, which comes into play when you're talking about something like the Armenian singing, to the Sephardic music that Nell does such amazing storytelling with.
This sounds not so much like a concert of old music, but something very, very new in how you are approaching it and incorporating styles and ideas. I understand there's also a through line of poetry or text or memories, I think. Unless I misread your notes.
Yes, I think that there is, and I think that we have selected and curated this so that we have, again, that dialogue between similar texts and memories across the traditions. Again, using this 1000 to 1400 period that the Met Cloisters exhibition focused on in 2016, which is a time of revolving administration of Jerusalem as a center and of the sacred sites within Jerusalem. And so there is very much this idea of loss or alienation or disenfranchisement, and also empowerment and celebration of life cycle events that happened within the traditions. So there's both continuity and discontinuity reflected, and definitely that component of memory, which in Western, early modern, Renaissance, choral composition and musical composition in general, sacred or secular, because the line was not anywhere near as sharp as it is in some places these days, was a very powerful metaphor. The idea that many of the religious leaders had never been to the Holy Land, to Jerusalem, but still enacted these local pilgrimages within these medieval churches that were literally laid out like a map of the Holy Land, with Jerusalem in one place and Bethlehem in one place, and this progression across the map from east to west as you went. They only had the memory of those centuries before them that had actually taken that pilgrimage. It wasn't possible in many cases for Western clerics to make that pilgrimage during these centuries. And so as the Protestant Reformation happened, and composers including William Byrd and Christoph Herrant and Philippe de Monte were working from a place of Roman Catholicism in their own practice, but then within a reforming Protestant context in London with the Anglican Church and in Prague, and even in the Ottoman Empire itself, where Herrant, who's one of the later composers on our program, was a guest, initially a pilgrim in disguise in order to get there, but then received warmly by the Sultan. There is this idea of hanging one's harps, you know, which is a central motif of this going back to the Old Testament, and feeling like a stranger in a strange land, whether you were operating in the place that you had always grown up, but felt some sense of distance from these stories that underpinned your culture, or whether you actually were a stranger, because as a professional musician, were moving around to places where there was a court or a church that could support what your art was doing. And for us that are modern performers, similar metaphor. The idea that this program has brought Scuola Antiqua to Manhattan, and then most recently to Toronto, to the Perimeter Institute, and then back to the Midwest in Kalamazoo. It's been a wonderful journey.
The concert again is at 4 o'clock this Sunday at First Congregational Church, and full details are at the festival website. ccmusicfest.com is a quick address for you. It's Connecting Chords Music Festival, and I'm talking to tenor and managing director Matthew Dean. And finally, I would like to know how your background in art history helps with music study, if it does. What can you learn about old music that was never recorded from depictions of music and musicians?
We in the early music practice community are very often looking at visual depictions of instruments and of the way singers would stand in groups and refer to printed sources or not. I work also with the Newberry Consort in Chicago, where many of the musicians in our circle are playing reproduction instruments for which the best source is a visual depiction, as one example. There are also in art, and this includes everyone from Hieronymus Bosch, outward, depictions of sheet music for which we don't have the source anymore, but there it is painted. And there are scholars who are working on reconstructing charts from just what is painted. So from a painted perspective, visual arts perspective, we have that ability to recover information. My own work particularly focuses on architecture and the architecture of sacred spaces and the acoustics of sacred spaces in relationship to the performance or enactment of composed music, especially along the Camino del Santiago in the north of Spain, where there are churches that are encyclopedic in that they bring in the local folk culture, pre-existing deities or architectural and art historical motifs, and they become part of things that are referred to in the way that the liturgy is enacted in terms of processions in and outside of the church, and in the way that the music is composed, with some of the same proportions of the way that the church was being built. Again, that idea of sacred time being divided in a certain way, sacred space being divided in a certain way, and following a calendar that has been handed down since time immemorial in one's daily work and family life, was real for both literate and illiterate medieval citizens in many places. And so it's always exciting for me to explore whatever sacred space that we're in and think about how we can bring music to life and how these works would have been originally performed in the architectural space, inside or out, you know, constructed as part of the human practice of settlement.
Is there a musical mystery that comes from your study that is number one on your list of things you wish would be solved or discovered?
There are some chestnuts in scholarship that have been approached from different places and perhaps never completely satisfactorily solved. And these range from the possibly encoded motet in the Rosslyn Chapel in Scotland, which was subject to much populist Templar debate with Dan Brown in recent years, to the Nuper Rosarum Flores motet, which was composed for the dedication of the Duomo, for example, and it's been explored that the number of minims or notes in lines in some of that polyphony matches the proportion of the dome or the space that's being created. That's not the only one. There are other places. There is always opportunity for further scholastic exploration of these topics and illustrating the way that medieval architectural proportions and compositional musical proportions played off of biblical and other sets of numbers that were important for this demarcation of time and space.
Well, if you would be so kind to tell our listeners how to maybe listen or study up on Schola Antiqua before Sunday with a website address or something like that.
Yes, we can be found on Facebook and YouTube and other social media sites using that Schola Antiqua. It will be the first thing that comes up. On the web, we are schola-antiqua.org. And at its essence, that means old school. We are old school in some sense in terms of the exploration that we're doing, but as you pointed out, what we are trying to do with this performance is to bring this new interconnection of performers from different streams together. That's a happy thing that's happening throughout many avenues of artistic exploration. And I hasten to mention also that this is part of a now 10-year ongoing initiative, which is called The Sounds of Faith, which is a concert paradigm that was started at the Harran Foundation here in Chicago. That's H-A-R-R-A-N foundation.org, which has some of the history of other places that we have taken dimensions of this and other programs, which include the Riverside Church in Manhattan to a United Nations Alliance of Culture presentation in Doha in Qatar. And in fact, my trip to Jerusalem in 2013, in order to do some research for this program that was first performed in 2016. So that Sounds of Faith International Concert Initiative has brought many scores of musicians from all over the world together to think about experiencing the sacred sounds of each other's traditions together and to see if there is something to be learned in terms of living together in modernity from some of these shared values, experiences, perspectives, and places like Jerusalem itself.
Well, Matthew Dean, thank you for a fascinating conversation, and I hope you have safe travels to Kalamazoo and a wonderful concert on Sunday. Thanks again.
Thank you. So nice to talk to you.